10, and then I installed a new radio and then digital RF on it. Mm-hmm. And then it seems like the audio source, just you point it at that sound card, and in fact you don't even have to do anything. It defaults to the sound card, and it reads that stuff in and spits it out. You just have to tell it where you wanted to put it and what level of compression you want. Compression level is one is ideal, I've found. So mm-hmm. what I'm trying to build up a script, an install script that will install everything, or at least install things in chunks, like a new radio and digital RF, so that we can build these systems. Because it took me a lot of hacking to get a first one to work. Mm-hmm. Oh man, you had to go in and in super user mode, stick something into a config file way down somewhere, and then I had to change some of the source code of one of the GNU radio version things because it didn't like the version. And anyway, I'm trying to get some of that to where it's automated so we can. How many of these systems are we going to need? Two or three or a bunch?
For when?
For Antarctica. I think that's, isn't that what we're
going to do? Oh, for Antarctica, two.
Okay.
Yeah, Antarctica would be two.
Anyway, but we do need to have something that is reproducible. And I might try and get Dan to help me with that.
That would be really good. And then we should have, I should have someone look at the data at a higher, I guess, time and spectral resolution, because from what you sent me, it looked very coarse. But I imagine if we reprocess it, we can do it better.
Nathaniel, we're at our time to get started. Right. Actually, so, 2 minutes late.
Oh, no. Record to the cloud. All right.
Okay. Well, welcome to Tuesday, February 9th, 2021. At 2 UTC. This is the Tangerine STR and HamSci Personal Space Weather Station Technical Talk. My name is Dave, KV0S, and this week I've been slowly getting myself back into some programming, so I've been working on that a little bit, but when I stopped, it takes a little bit to get your head back in it. So, making headway. Next on the list, we have Nathaniel, W2NAF, and I see you have a big meeting coming up. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, Dave. I do have a big meeting coming up. The HamSci workshop, right? Is that the one you're talking about?
Well, and even before that, this week.
Oh, yes, that's right. So this week there's a geospace discovery workshop, which some people, I sent around to some people. I'll be talking about the personal space weather station there to the professional community. So I'm one of a number of people who have these DAISY grants, distributed array of small instruments, and they invited all of the DAISY PIs to be a part of the same little panel session. So I'll be there. Jen Gannon is going to be on that panel as well. So it should be good. Another big meeting that's coming up is the HamSci workshop. And yep. So what I like to do, as you know, is I like to get updates from the different team members. So from the Tangerine SDR team, from the magnetometer team, etc., have update presentations. So I was wondering if we could have a little time tonight just to confirm who's going to be presenting and what they're presenting. And finally, I've been meeting with a lot of students and some volunteers doing research work. And probably most of interest to Dave McGaw, I've been working with Veronica, and we watched Claire Trope's AGU presentation, and we thought it was very good. And we think we can apply the same sort of analysis technique she's using with the lags to the HF grape data. So I'm going to have Veronica start working on that and try to replicate that same type of analysis using HF instead of AM. So W2NAF, back to net.
Fine business. Next on the list, we have Jim, K4BSE. Go ahead, Jim. Jim, are you there?
Anybody have a relay?
He says his mic is not working. Okay, next on the list, we have Greg, VA3CBN. Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks, Dave. As usual, I'm just going to listen in, but Very soon I'll be setting up my first red pataya, and hopefully I can get some tips from some of you guys, and really looking forward to it because RBN is one of the things I want to focus on with my ham career. So back to you.
Well, fine business. I'm using one as a multi-receiver on a WhisperNet right now. So they seem to work fine, except for a little overheating, even in this cold weather. next on the list is Bill, AB4EJ. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, did a little bit of work on the grape. As you know, we're trying to move the Case Western Reserve team over from running FL Digi and extracting a single frequency into saving spectrum. So this week my task was to get GNU radio and digital RF running on a grape station, which I have done, and that I'm trying to develop now a script for building that, because as it is right now, it's very hacky, hack up because, I don't know, there are some things. I'm working with Dan N4XWE on this, and I may need to get a little bit more help from him on getting reliable scripts to run so we can build some of these things. But other than that, just working on the NASA proposal with Nathaniel and Phil Erickson. Back to Ned.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Bo Laurie. Go ahead, Bo.
Yeah, hello there. My call is WB4GZK. Been active for many years in most aspects of radio, ham radio, including VHF and UHF. And I'm just here tonight to find out what's going on. So turn it back to you.
Well, welcome. And if you hear about stuff you're interested in or you want to participate, please come back.
I will do that. Thank you.
Yep. And next on the list is Dan, N4XWE. Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you, Dave. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, worked on scripts last week. There was a new version of WSJTX that came out, and a couple of other minor changes on things that I think spouted up three or four of the scripts that I had on my website. And that's just about it. So I've been back and forth with Bill, and we're, as he said, we're trying to come up with some scripts that will automate the install process for all the software. Anyway, back to you, Dave.
Fine business, Dan. And next on the list, we have Dave, KD0EAG. Go ahead, Dave.
I have not been doing an awful lot that's very directly impacts the PSWS stuff. I've just been working on more testing code for magnetometer, and that's about it.
Back to fine business. And next on the list is David in 1HAC. Go ahead, David.
Hello, all. I've been working a lot on various loop antennas, field antenna, playing with a red pataya, HF, VLF, boy, what else? A lot of other things. We got some, I have a VLF experiment, HF VLF on a sounding rocket coming up soon. Various ground experiments we're working on. And I guess I have one question to throw out to the ether. Is there any utility to graph our magnetometer data so that I can compare it to other data that I'm getting? And I'll leave that for later discussion. Back to Ned.
Well, fine business, Dave. David, there is a little attempt at graphing some of our data, but nothing as far as a website or organizing it extensively yet that I know of, but I am trying to use Homan's code a little bit, and I think Jules was doing the same. So although I think he had his own code, and I'm not sure about Dave. So that's what I know about right now going on.
Thank you.
And next on the list is Gary, AA, got B on the mind.
No problem, Dave. Now you know I operate CW 99%.
Oh, I see.
Nothing to add tonight. Just hope everyone's keeping warm. Back to net.
Yes. Next on the list is Homan. Go ahead, Homan.
Good evening. Nothing in particular this week. I was trying to go to Jenny Jump, but I was advised not to go because of the snow. We have zero accessibility at this moment. So I was planning to go there to swap the board over there, but that's been delayed because of the snow. So back to net.
Fine business. Next on the list is James, KG4, DSG. Go ahead, James.
Yeah, just listening in tonight and trying to stay out of the snow, which is rolling in. Back to net. Yep.
Fine business. And next on the list is Jonathan, KC3EEY. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hi, everybody. I don't really have much to report. I've been fairly busy with work, so I haven't been able to work on anything. Back to the net.
Very good. And next on the list is Jules, K2KGJ. Go ahead, Jules.
Hey, Dave, on the list, too much going on this week, mostly snow-related winter maintenance. I'm waiting for some parts from Scotty, which I expect in the next couple of days, and then I'll mod those and send them on to Hillman for his students' project. Other than that, we continue to record on both the dual and the single magnetometer, and when I get a chance, I try graphing a few. I still have to integrate Hillman's graph program, but we're working on that too. Back to net.
Well, fine business. And next on the list is Contran, and you're welcome back.
Hey y'all. I did pass my technician test on Saturday, so I'm studying for the general now. So I'm back here. I'm still new, trying to learn RF, so I'm here to, hopefully learn a few things from listening to you guys. If you guys need like a visual, a 3D visualizer, I'm working on something right now, like a website. I'll put the link in the chat for you guys to check it out. If you guys need something like a 3D like graphing tool or whatnot for webs.
Well, very good. We can also pass a graph on of a typical stack line graph that is what people are used to looking at. And I'll put a link in the chat when I get done talking to everybody.
Okay. All right. Cool. Thanks.
Or if somebody has that stack line graph available, stick it in the chat. Next on the list, let's see, Michael, AAAK. Go ahead, Michael. Fine business. And next on the list is Scotty, WA2DFI.
Hello there, Dave. Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay? Yep.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. Congratulations to Contron on his new license. Way to go.
Yes.
You could, if you took the test on Saturday, you could probably get your call sign now by going to the ULS database. Because a friend of mine took his test on Saturday also, and he just got his license, his call sign today. And you're not going to believe this. His call sign?
Yes.
KJ7UDP.
Hey.
So we'll be looking forward to see what you get. And a lot.
Scotty, did he acknowledge the call sign?
He doesn't have to.
Right? That's right. He doesn't.
If he had KJ7TCP, then he'd have to.
Yes.
Go. Getting a call sign is now easier than getting a COVID vaccination.
Yes.
It certainly is faster, that's for sure.
Yes.
Anyway, I've done a little bit. I was hoping that John Gibbon would be here. He's not here tonight, but I exchanged an email with him on the pinout of the grape to make sure that I took his pinout document and I added the pins for the magnetometer. And we'll make sure that the data engine drives those pins. But the best news today is I finished all the backup projects that were clogging the pipe here. So I have only one project left to work on, and it's Tangerine. So
yay.
Full speed ahead here. So it's fast to do it. And anyway, that's it for here. And it was 75 today. So eat your heart out.
Bye. Oh, geez. And are you and Nona feeling well?
Yeah, we're feeling fine. We're doing well.
Yeah.
After we have appointments for vaccinations on the 22nd.
Yeah.
I don't know that we'll need them, but we thought, well, we probably ought to get them anyway because they're here. So.
Hey, Scotty, you're an order of magnitude above us here. We have 6 degrees.
You have what? 6 degrees? Oh, my. Well, let's see. What is that? I remember that I was exchanging emails with Larry from ARL, and there was one day where his temperature in degrees F was our temperature in degrees C. And wow. it was 18 degrees. So,
right.
And we were C, and he was F, so he was cold.
Yes.
So did you get a lot of snow from that storm, David?
We didn't get a whole lot. It was to the south of us here.
Oh, okay. Because I was looking.
I got about 3 inches.
And on the weather service, and it showed heavy snow, and the boundary was like included like 5 of the people on this list here.
Yeah. I think my mom got a bunch. And Hillman.
Hillman got snowed out of Jenny Jumps. So,
yeah.
Well, we got 14 here.
I want to finish the call. The list.
One more thing. Jules, I sent off those boards. I think they went out Wednesday or Thursday, so you should see them any day now. And I had my revisions slightly off. It's really revs C and D, not D and E. So I sent you one of each, and one of them has a daughter card on it. So
perfect.
You said, let me know if you need any others.
Will do. Thank you very much. Let's see. Since temperature is sort of like voltage, that's 20 dBV difference, right? Or 20 dBT.
Okay, very good. I like it. Back to you, Dave.
Okay, so next on the list we have Tom in 5EG. Go ahead, Tom.
Good evening. I've got the prototype of the code to manipulate the module and ASIC registers, doing auto discovery on Hermes, and that comes up and runs. It can find Hermes on the network and pull all the relevant parameters out of it. So that's at least a start. I think I've identified one change we need to make to the discovery response packet, but Bill and I can talk about that offline. Other than that, other VPN and domain stuff, but nothing major. Back to the group.
Say, Tom, would you include me on that packet change? Because I'm working on some of that stuff too.
Yeah, the discovery response from HPSDR needs to have a new field added called port B, which is the port that the data engine's going to communicate on.
Okay.
And so I think we can just make a simple structure change and add it in there.
Yep.
Well, Bill and I and Scott need to talk about it. And we'll figure something out.
Okay. Well, I'm working on a simulator set that I can use when Scotty comes to me to talk about shipping data back and forth.
A simulator is great. It'd make the register manipulation software a lot easier to test and check out.
Yes. So that's what I've been working on.
It'll be sooner than you think, Dave.
So, Scotty, I have one other thing related to you. The magnetometer that I had that went bad that I talked about last week, it turned out it was the one that was outside was the PNI board that had been underwater. And when it got below,
I thought that's the one you sent me.
No. I sent you the carrier board that went underwater, but okay. I kept the PNI board because it was still working.
Oh, so the PNI one you sent me was the one that never worked, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So the one I had that was had been working, when it got below 0C, it stopped working. It started throwing I squared 2 errors. But what was interesting is I moved it inside the house, and it works fine inside the house. So it must be water in some joint that stretches the joint enough that it doesn't work.
So what temp does it stop working?
Zero.
Oh, C. Zero. So is freezing. Anyone else, has anyone else run their magnetometers down below freezing to see if they still work okay?
The one
I have.
Yes. The last one you ran, you sent me, Scotty, is outside now, and I got it as low as minus 8 C.
Okay.
And it works fine.
So you need another one then?
Well, I have two, but one has to only work inside the house.
How about you take the inside only one and you put it in the oven at 200 degrees overnight?
Well, I could try that.
Try baking it. See what happens. You might try it. I don't. If you want another one, I'll send you another one.
Okay.
Do you have any reason? Sure. Any particular reason for suggesting baking it?
Because we're
dry it out.
Yeah, we're estimating there's moisture in there that's freezing and breaking something, pressing something apart. So
that makes sense.
So we'd probably remelt the solder.
Yeah, the mag I have is it's in a box sitting on the ground under the snow, but it's not buried. So I haven't checked its temperature lately, but it gets cold.
Mine is in an insulated tube, but not below ground because of my water problem.
So yours still gets to 8 degrees, minus 8 degrees C?
Yeah, it's got a 6 degrees last night outside in Fahrenheit. So it's basically that.
Brr.
It's going to get below zero Fahrenheit here next weekend.
It's the reason why I left the East.
So.
Because I'll talk to you in August when it's 115 out here, and then you can check at me.
Well, we can get that, but not for as long a time frame as you.
You probably don't get 115, though, do you?
No.
Usually like 100, a couple hundred and a change is all you get ever?
Yes. But I did live in Medford, Oregon, and Tom can probably attest that it does get hot there sometimes.
Oh yeah, it gets up to 100 often in the summer.
I remember working outside one week; it was 110 all week, but it was nicer in the mountains.
See, you know, after I moved here, I never really realized it till I thought about it. But once June hits here in Phoenix, you can expect every single day until September to be over 100. It's wow. Almost it's very rare you get a below 100 degree day. For June, July, and August.
You can have it.
Hey, I talked to a guy on the radio once. He's in Vermont, and he's a bicyclist, and he said the reason he lives in Vermont, wherever, I forget what town he lived in, he says it never, ever gets above 75F there, ever. That's what he claims. Now, so I don't know if he's up in the mountains or what, but
I told him.
Yeah, he must be up in the mountains, we generally will get up to 99 in the summer, and very rarely has it gotten over 100, only in the last couple of years.
Generally, the entire month of August, it never gets below 75 ever, at night, daytime, anytime. So there you go. If you like hot, this is your place. But I like the Northeast in the summer, but I don't like it much in the winter. So
I didn't get Dev. Dev, do you want to make a comment? You're muted.
Yeah, about who I am?
Well, I didn't call on you for comments.
Okay.
Do you have any comments?
I think I have not introduced myself, so maybe I can just introduce myself?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm doing fine. It was a nice weekend, and we have started. And we're making slow progress on our project. Other than that, this week, I don't have very exciting big news to report. Thank you.
Very good. And the other one that has joined us is Elizabeth. Comments, Elizabeth?
No comments right now. No, it's been a long time and just wanted to pop in and listen. I'm currently working, but I can still listen to everyone. So
welcome back.
Thank you. I'll be doing that in all the meetings because the time is during my work hours. So
okay.
But glad to be back.
Welcome back.
I think we got everybody on the list.
By the way, I got the notice for this from Dev through HAMSCI, but not Tangerine again. Did it get sent both ways?
I saw it got sent both ways, but the same thing happened for me. Okay. So
I got it from Tangerine.
Hey, you know, yeah. What listserv do you use, Nathaniel, for HAMSCI?
I use Google Groups.
So that's different than what we're using. Okay.
Yeah.
It might end up eliminating duplicates if it was similar software, but it's not, so.
Yeah. David, did you used to get them from me when I would send them?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know that I've gotten anything through Tangerine in a while.
Michael is showing his link, but I can only see the very start of it. There you go.
Yeah, so like last week, Nathaniel, I got the one that you sent through Tangerine, but not the one that Dev did. And the same, and you didn't send one this week, I presume.
Right.
And I only got the one through HAMSCI.
That is mysterious because it is clearly showing up on, like we saw it on the screen there, and we also checked it on the archives last week. And so I could see it there, but it is not in your email box and it's not in mine. David, does Dartmouth use Microsoft Office 365?
Yes, we do.
Yes.
Okay.
And it may have gotten on
a filter
list.
It makes zero sense because I had no problem getting the messages. Like I got the message from Stana about the PSR through Tangerine SDR like a couple days ago.
Yeah, I've gotten. There was a Tangerine SDR about winter PSRs in the works a couple days ago. I got that one.
Yeah, I got that too. So I don't know why.
And then the notes from last week.
I mean, I can talk to my IT people because the last time I had a tremendous amount of trouble getting signed on to Tangerine SDR at the beginning when I got to Scranton. And it turned out they had to contact Microsoft and get the server off of a blacklist.
Yeah.
And I think you had the same problem.
Yes, I've had that problem with a number of mailing lists, including ones coming from John Ackerman.
Yeah, but then let's see. Yeah, but then I don't understand why I would get like Stana's email, but not Dev's.
Well, it has to do with the originating IP. So it seems to be certain IP servers they put on the blacklist and you never even see it go to junk mail. It just really disappears into the ether.
Well, I'm reasonably friendly with our email administrator. So maybe I'll drop him a note. So ask him. Anyway.
Very good.
I think most people got the message. We're here. We'll try to look into that in the future. Can we talk about the HAMSCI workshop for a little bit?
Have at it.
All right. So in the past, we have had reports. This is last year's schedule. So for the HAMSCI workshop, I gave an opening talk. Scotty, you gave a talk on the current status of the data engine and overall architecture. Tom gave one on the RF module. John gave one on the clock module. Bill gave one on database and control architecture. There's a joint talk from Dave Witten, Frankie Bonney, and Hyoman on the magnetometer. And then we had Case Western give an update on the low-cost personal space weather station. So I'd like to have updates from each of the different teams again. So just wanted to see if people could confirm that they could give these talks and if there were any suggestions as to how to change the structure overall. Like, I don't know if the RF module has not really changed since last year and that gets folded into here or something like that. So I'd be interested in hearing if people are up for doing this and if there are any suggestions for changes.
Yeah, Nathaniel, you're right. The RF module has had no changes, no updates since last year.
Okay.
Yeah,
but the
overall structure looks pretty good. I mean, except that we probably have less to say on things that haven't changed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, if, you know, any presentation would just be basically a repeat of last year. What's changed is John Ackerman's portion.
Yeah.
And so maybe we should definitely keep John in since his is on.
What about maybe asking Jonathan to talk about the VLF module if to substitute that for the RF module if you wanted to
But I think he's already on the hook for submitting a presentation. So that's good. That module, we could move his talk up to here.
Okay. Yeah. If he's willing.
And the RF module, maybe just include that in the overall architecture.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, include it in, you know, where it's at, where.
Right.
Because let's see, by well, it's what's the actual dates this year, Nathaniel?
March 19th and 20th. So this will take place on March 19th.
Okay, so we could theoretically have some more progress between now and then, as far as where, you know, where we are in the building phase, because we will be into the building phase by then.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, yeah, so, about the software architecture, I don't know that that's really changed enough to, it would be mostly a repeat. If I gave a presentation on it, it would be mostly the same remarks as last year.
Yeah, well, we don't really want to. We definitely need status updates. We don't necessarily need repeats. But some things...
A status update could be like 20 minutes would be more than enough for all the boards. Because we don't really need to go over what the boards do again, right?
Right. That's right.
But the RF or the clock module was never really talked about in a lot of detail, I think, last year, because the architecture is completely different than we originally estimated it would be.
Yeah, so I'm thinking of folding this RF module one into your talk. It'll just be, so let me see if I can, maybe I can, okay, design and do layout rather. Faster. Orientation. Landscape. Well, we get the idea. Okay, so this. So basically, I would get rid of this one. No, I keep that one. I would get rid of this one.
And then yours, Nathaniel, your overview would essentially be the same as last year?
Yeah, I would, but still be like opening remarks or something like that. It'd be more or less the same. I'd probably give some highlights as to what some of the different things that we have done, point out that we're making some progress on the science.
Yeah, because the magnetometers chiefly where we made progress there.
Yeah. So actually, let me start with Bill. Bill, maybe the main architecture has stayed relatively the same, but you know, you certainly have done some things in terms of you now have the software ported onto the GREEP. You've made some other progress on things or your team, haven't you?
Well, I mean, I could give a demo of the system.
Yeah,
running with the simulator. If I suppose it's remotely possible, we could have a tangerine with the hardware board running by then. I don't know, but I could give a demo. I mean, that's a little bit more got a little bit more meat to it than just talking about architecture. I mean, most people's eyes glaze over when they hear that anyway. So, but giving a demo is you know, that would hold interest a little bit more, I think.
So that would be the demo like you gave at Hamcation last year?
I guess probably. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be a really good idea, Bill.
Yeah, and with this can be a virtual concept, you know, this can be virtual. Oh, you know, considering that, I just thought of something. I could, using the Flex Radio as the simulator, basically the data engine simulator, I could show it with on-air signals in the demo. So that would be, you know, give, again, a little bit more meaty.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly the sort of thing we'd want. What do you want me to call that? Andrian SDR software demo?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, if we want to change this, if we want to change the title a little bit later on, we can do that. But that's a good start.
Yeah, that sounds good. So then, Yeoman and Dave and Jules, how do you want to do the magnetometer talk or talks if you want more than one?
I think it's Holman is the guy to talk. It looks like Dave's not here.
And Dave said his back was hurting, so he left.
Oh, Yeoman, what are you thinking for this?
Yeah, I think, well, I think, you know, Dave Witten should be the first author, and then I'll be very happy to support whatever is needed.
Yeah. Do you think it makes sense to do one magnetometer talk or like one on hardware, one on analysis?
Mm,
or do you think just one is good?
Well, I know it's been, we've been talking about the hardware mostly. So now I think, yeah, I think that's a good idea to separate those two.
Yeah, because it's probably some people who would be interested in, well, how do you make one of these things? What right. physically are they? Right. And then the other piece is the performance, which is something that Hillman is really really concerned about in terms of the sensitivity, stability, and so on and so forth.
Sure. And now we have some data sets accumulated so far.
When you say make one, are you talking about cutting the pipe and sliding the board in and showing how to keep it temperature stable? That, because that's really, that would be,
that's what I had in mind, right?
Yeah, yeah, as opposed to making the board. That's kind of like right. what we did that last year. Let's right. show how to use it now.
How do I assemble a working unit and use it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you want me to split up the authors here?
Is Frankie still involved?
She is, but not on this part of the project. Yeah, I just copied and pasted this from last year. That's why her name was there. So yeah, how would you like this?
Dave and Scotty for hardware. I don't know. I mean, I think Jules can go both sides, I think, right?
Yeah, I could, because I did look at performance versus temperature,
right?
Unit to unit accuracy, things of that sort. I would, with respect to the hardware and software, Dave that did the original research on the PNI in terms of selecting that, and maybe some background on why he chose that. And then from there, go into how the thing was integrated into the Pi with his and Scotty's board design, and then progress to a complete magnetometer setup.
Well, I think Holman gave us a heads up on that as being a reasonable, the PNI board was a good one.
Oh, sorry, I probably missed that.
But Dave did the original research and built the original test boards, the proof of concept that these things would even work for us.
That's right. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I think it's a good idea to separate those, like two different aspects, like hardware and science.
Okay.
And I think it's a good time to talk about why we do this and stuff.
So they call it like PSWS, ground magnet, Tom magnet.
Tom meter magenta.
You need to know. There.
And then we have ground magnetometer hardware.
Yeah.
And you need an E on the institute unless you're a German.
Yeah, there's going to have to be some editing. This is just a draft right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
especially since Frankie isn't in high school anymore, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, she's actually a freshman at Case Western now.
And so she's, but take the DeSales High School out of there, right?
Yes.
For that particular talk.
Yeah. So Frankie is a freshman at Case Western now, in both double majoring in engineering and dance. And she is she does do stuff with the Case Amateur Radio Club, and she does some stuff with the GRAPE project. One of the things that she's been doing is she's been a co-host, co-anchor of this YouTube TV show called What Hams Do, that's being produced by a ham, Jay Silber, out of Philadelphia. And he's done two or three of these shows so far, and he's just finishing up an episode about the GRAPE personal space weather station. So he covers kind of the project, the personal space weather station project in general, but focuses on the GRAPE because we actually sent him one, had him set it up at his house, and he's interacted with John Gibbons and Frankie and myself. And so I think that TV show is supposed to come out in about a week or two, maybe the end of February. So it'll be out in time before the Hamside workshop.
Where will it be broadcast?
On YouTube.
Okay, so how will we know where it is?
I can send you a link, or I can I'll put a link in the chat to one of his previous shows, and then you can just follow him.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yes. So
and then the other thing I have to think about with this is now that we're starting to get some science out of some of these things, we have the grand magnetometer hardware and science. For the grape, we're also going to have hardware and science as well. And I think that might flow fairly easily in the afternoon, because that's kind of what we've done in the past. But we have PSWS grape hardware. We get a status update on that, and then PSWS grape science. I think Steve Serwin is probably, we're actually going to have probably a number of talks on this, because I mean, Steve Serwin has something to say about this. Christina, I'm sure, is going to have something to say possibly about the upcoming, but the past solar eclipse and the upcoming one that's going on in Antarctica. Veronica is working on some stuff, although she may end up having more of a poster this year. And Dev is going to say something, going to give a talk on the chirp sounding efforts. So I have to decide whether it makes sense to put all the hardware talks back to back and then the science talks, or to interleave the hardware science. I think it makes more sense to do hardware first and then science later.
I think that works.
Yeah, sounds right.
Yeah, so this magnetometer hardware and science talk, they may end up getting split up, although they seem really nice together.
So I would assume the New Jersey Institute, and isn't that technical institute, it's associated with Hohmann, right?
Yes.
So you need to move it down one block.
I'm just going to delete this column because I know what institution everyone's from. And I just, now it's not a problem anymore.
Okay.
I'll make sure it's right on the website.
Okay.
So I think that's pretty good. Is there anything else that anyone can think of? We'll make sure we put the VLF module on here. So you should probably insert... Jonathan, are you up for doing a VLF module talk?
Will the talks be pre-recorded or will they be live?
I prefer them live, but if you can't do that, we can, because you have other obligations, we can certainly work with you.
And Nathaniel, can we do pre-recorded and then be there for Q&A? Is that an option?
If that's how you prefer it. I think I like it live if you can do it. But okay. If you can't,
recording has an advantage that you know exactly how long it is and there's no overruns ever.
That is true. I personally just I find the live talks more exhilarating, but maybe that's me.
Okay, that means I get to go over, right?
yeah.
Hey, Scotty always brings 60 slides for 30 minutes.
Or for 20 minutes or for 10 minutes or for
I'll pull out the virtual hook.
Okay.
Jonathan, is this something you want to do?
Yes. I can do it live. Or I could do it pre-recorded. The only thing is that I'm not sure what's going to happen yet, because I haven't started my new job, and I don't know if I would have... say like vacation available to take the time off. So if I can't take the time off, then would it be okay if I pre-record the presentation and then Q&A can be sent to me via email and I could respond later?
Yes, that would be fine.
Okay.
And does your new job, do they have any public outreach or community service for space weather types of applications?
Actually, I really don't know yet. I've just been learning about orientation, company policy, things of that nature. But as soon as I get more involved, I don't start until the end of this month, so I'm not really sure, but I'll definitely get that. I'll definitely see what's going on.
Yeah, we're very proud of Jonathan because he graduated from the University of Scranton with an electrical engineering degree, and he always wanted to be an electrical engineer, and he has officially taken a job as an electrical engineer. So
yay.
Congratulations. Congratulations to Jonathan.
Where's your job, Jonathan?
I'll be working for a defense contractor at an army base.
Okay, interesting.
In my local area. I'll be working in avionics and sensors.
All right.
Very good.
You're going to learn a lot.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. I'm nervous and excited all at the same time.
So, okay. Are there any other talks that we should have in here that I don't have? I should put Dev's talk in here. I know Dev's going to give one. Insert below. So let's see. So
this is just the first day, right, Nathaniel?
Yes. Does Dartmouth want to put anything in, David?
Well, I'm wondering if we want to see if Claire would do a talk on what we've been doing.
Her talk was fantastic from AGU. Like, she could just give the exact same talk.
Exactly.
And as I said, I'm encouraging Veronica to basically try replicating her analysis using the grapes.
Right.
That HF.
Yeah.
So
that would dovetail well.
Yeah. So if Claire could just give her same AGU talk, that would be perfect.
Yeah. I'll be meeting with her tomorrow. I can bring it up.
Okay. That'd be really nice. All right. I think that's enough of this for now. Thank you very much, everyone, for helping me to kind of flesh that out. And I put the what hams do episode 1 in the chat there. It's a very nice, Jay does a really nice job with this. And Frankie does a really nice job with it too.
Hey, Nathaniel.
Yeah.
Is Frankie the graduate of Carol's program in New York? Is that her?
Frankie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's who, okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Got quiet.
Hey, Greg, where are you physically?
London, Ontario.
Yeah, I had a 6-meter contact with Ontario. Was it last night or the night before? We had an opening.
I'm 2 hours east of Detroit City on the Canadian side.
Right. Yeah, this was actually, it wasn't Windsor, Ontario, but right near Windsor, I made a contact.
FDA. I grew up in a town called Kingsville. It's on the north shore of Lake Erie, right across from Cleveland. That's where I grew up.
Ah, very good. Driven across there many times, getting over to Detroit from here. Yeah, we had a good 6-meter evening opening. There even was some voice, but not very active, but there was a lot of FT8.
Do you have a call sign who you talk to, Dave?
I was going to look it up.
We have a new 6-meter repeater just outside of London as well.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, they just put it online about 6 months ago. It's pretty cool.
VA3 EKG. There was another VA3 on that I was seeing too, but wasn't able to make a contact.
I'll go on QRZ and see if I know him or her. So,
Scotty, what were some of the items that you found when you were looking over all the stuff in the email that I sent you?
What was it? What did I find? What? You said ovens?
Items.
Items. Okay. The last email you sent me was about the new regulator, right? That new one that you found?
Yeah, it was. I gave you a list of the pins that I would need, power, whether they were input or output, and gave you the regulator schematic from the evaluation board.
Okay, how long ago did you send that?
Oh,
I space it out.
Had to be like 3 weeks ago or something.
Okay. I didn't realize that I got that, but I will take a look for it because I'm just now getting back to the data engine and the pinout's pretty much the last thing I have to do. So that will, I'll be able to answer those questions. I just looked at the one today on the regulator. Did you send me two different emails or was it just one?
There are two.
Okay. So I must've just looked at the last one and not the first one.
Yeah. The first one had the list of pins and what I had in mind with them. And then I replied to that email and I sent you the schematic of the regulator.
Okay. See, I don't remember that. Okay. Let me look and make sure I have it before, so you can send it to me again if I don't have it. I know I got the one on the regulator, and I think that regulator looks better than the one we were using for the clock board. So is that the one that's on the development module that you got? Or did you find that someplace else?
No, that was the exact circuit that they use on the dev board.
Okay. Because we had picked a different regulator. I think it was on the dev board that John Ackerman was using, but it costs about 2.5 times what the one you were talking about, and the noise output's higher.
Wow, okay.
So that's actually a better regulator for less money. That's kind of not usually what happens.
Yeah. I was looking at the data sheet, and the performance looked really good.
Okay, just a second here. I'm going through my email here. Okay, let's see. How come I don't have anything for 2021? That can't be right. Oh, my. Okay, I think I'm zeroing in on it here. Okay, so I got the one for the audio module. Yes. Okay. I did get that, but I don't see what this attachment is. That's a schematic for the power supply, right?
Yep.
Okay. I did get that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to write you an email later today or tomorrow, because there's what would be good is for you to take the power off of the 5 volts or 3 volts, generate your 1.8 volt power for that. If you need 1.8, and we'll use the IOVDD pin from the connector to supply your IO power, but the internal power for your part for the A to D, you should provide that on your board with the regulator rather than take it off. Because if you take it off of the data engine, it's going to be noisier than what you can create. So you should regulate it locally for that. But the IO power doesn't really matter, and it has to match whatever comes in. So that's why I provide you with a VDD IO pin that you can hook to your IO buffers.
Right.
To the core of the part.
Well, do you have enough 3.3 volt IO?
That's what I'm looking at next. So,
okay.
I'll have to get back to you probably tomorrow, because I'm on this full time now. So we're going to get this nailed down, because this is basically the last thing I have to do is connect these IOs up, and everything else is done. So once we figure out how I'm going to stretch 5 IOs into 20, then we'll have the answer.
Okay.
And it may be, I hate to say this, it may be that either you or I is going to have to convert them to 3 volts. I don't like that, but if that's maybe what we have to do. I know I have an extra 1.5 volt IOs because the memory runs on 1.5. So I stole one of the circuits off of one of the other development boards where they run the SD card off of the 1.5 volt IO, and they use level translators, because since the SD card can be a multi-voltage device, you select the voltage that you want it to run at. You have to do a level translation anyway, because you don't know what it's going to be at.
Right.
So yeah, I just picked 1.5 because I had extra. And oddly enough, one of the development cards, they have the same problem that we all have. When you put a memory on there, you get this whole extra bank of 1.5 volt signals that you can't really use for anything else. So they put hooked a level translator up to that bank instead of one of the other banks. And I just copied it. So
okay.
When I see something that works, I just copy it. I don't really feel the need to reinvent something somebody else has already done.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do too.
And if they did it that way, then we can steal their code too, because they've got code to support it, hopefully, and it's hooked up the same way. So
okay.
So yeah, let me look through those emails again and get back to you, because I sent the regulator off to John to say, look at this one. Doesn't this look better? And to see if it'll pass muster, and we may use it on the clock module as well, because it's lower noise than the one that he's using, think it's 13 microvolts versus 33 microvolts. That's a significant amount.
Wow.
The headroom is a little bit higher at full output. It's 280 millivolts instead of 110.
Yeah.
But if you're running off of 3.3 volts, that doesn't matter. That's, you're well within the spec. So.
Yeah. I was really I really liked the performance for the price. It was much cheaper than the LT part that I was looking at using.
And doesn't that ADC you're using, that's only about $3.50, right? Isn't it cheap?
Well, no, the ADC itself, I think it's about $10 or $12, but it's not too bad.
Okay. That's the TI one we're talking about, right?
Yep.
Sounds good.
Okay, yeah. When you get a chance, write me that email, and then this way I'll know how to proceed, and I can go from there.
Okay, because one of the things I really wanted to do for both of these connectors is actually for the RF connector also, is a extension of the interface control document, which says, okay, here's the pins that we have, and are they ins, are they outs, what voltage level are they, how much current can you get out of the power supplies, and all that. So it's really a way for you to determine how to connect up your new board.
Right.
What are the capabilities of the pins? And some of them are going to be grouped together, and they're going to be running at the VCC IO level. So you have to be able to use those. And if I define those a particular way because of the limitations of my pins, are you going to be able to use them? That's the question that we have.
Okay.
Is it going to be sufficient IO at the voltages you need to work?
Well, I really don't need much. Bit clock, channel clock, master clock, data out, and shutdown.
Yep, and those all have to be 3 volt? Or can they be, are any of them open collector inputs to you, like outputs from me, in other words?
No, they are not open collector. They could be either 1.8 or 3.3 volts.
Okay. Now, I know on the AKM part, it wouldn't run at full speed at 1.8 volts. So is the core voltage separate from the IO voltage on this part?
I don't think this part has that same limitation.
Okay.
I would prefer to run it at 3.3 volts, however.
Okay. Well, the thing about it is that the VCC IO is strappable based upon the RF modules. So each RF module is separately strapped. And I have some extra pins on one of the RF modules. So it'll end up being, however that's strapped, that's the voltage you're going to get. And I'll give it to you on a pin. And then you actually just use that to run your IO buffers.
Okay. But
we have to make sure it'll work before we can do that.
Yeah.
So if you choose to run the part on 3.3 and the IO on 1.8, we have to just make sure that it'll run at full speed you doing that. And again, I prefer to run it all on 3.3, but like I said, I'm out of IO, so we'll see what I can come up with here.
Well, there's different power supply inputs. So AVDD, the analog power input, that I'm going to run at 3.3 volts off of the regulator.
Off your local regulator, right?
Yeah. And then there's the IOVDD power supply input, and that could either be 3.3 or 1.8.
Okay, but not 2.5?
No.
Okay. Because you do have the option to strap it to 2.5, but you know, this all arose from the point that the RF module requires 1.8 on its IO. So as far as I'm concerned, we can lose the 2.5 output as a spec change because we don't have anything that uses 2.5 now. So
yeah,
you can make it 3.3 or 1.8, and then we can meet the spec there. But I may be able to scrape up enough 3.3 volt IO. I don't know. The problem is that the Raspberry Pi IOs really have to be 3.3. And while I'm not going to drive all of them, I have to drive a certain number of them so I can be compatible with the grape.
Right. Well, I only need five, and the I squared C.
Yep, and the I2C could be, it's open collector, so open drain. So that could be on 1.5 volt IOs actually. Because my 1.5 volt IOs are 5 volt compatible. Or sorry, 3.3 volt compatible. So,
okay.
And I can set the outputs to be open drain or open collector, whatever, open drain. And then the way ITC works is you have to have a pull-up resistor. And the pull-up resistor can go to whatever voltage you need it to go to, which is convenient on the 1.5 volt outputs. You can actually hook them up to a 3.3 volt pull-up.
Right.
And your 1.5 volt IO, then if it's an output, becomes a 3 volt.
Okay.
But it's open drain, so it's not particularly fast. But that's okay because I2C isn't particularly fast. So.
Right.
So that works. And then coming in, if you you know, if you're pulled up to 3.3, that's fine with me because my pins are 3.3 volt tolerant. As long as you can get the VOH down low enough, like below 0.4 volt, then we're good. And I basically connected all the I2C local ports up to the 1.5 volt pins because we can do this. And they've got pull-ups to 3.3. So... Let me go to that email and go back and get back to you and tell you what I got, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Yeah, everything that I need is listed in there, and unfortunately, it seems like a necessary evil, but I'm going to need that shutdown pin because that's gonna control the whole thing. So.
Okay.
There's not really a way around it from what I could read in the
page. What do you need the shutdown for again?
Well,
it goes into the shutdown pin of the part, but why do you have to shut it down?
Well, there's the shutdown pin has to be so when it's originally powered up, the shutdown pin has to be low, and then and then it has to be configured I don't remember. I'll have to take another look. But it seemed like in the power up sequence or the boot sequence, and to get the ADC configured, the shutdown had to be asserted so it's not shut down. It was part of the power up sequence.
Okay, so it had, perhaps they do this like on some other parts, is where they read some control pins during the time that it's shut down, and so this is a specific sequence that has to be applied when you come out of reset.
Yeah.
I don't see if that's a problem. I think it's a good idea to have a shutdown pin under control of the system anyway, in case you want to turn it off, save power.
Right. Yeah, that's another good thing, because when it's in shutdown mode, it uses much, much less power. And you know, if it's not being used, you know, I don't really see any reason to waste power on it. So.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.